that teaches at a podium, so this is going to be very hard for me, but we'll give it a try. Maybe I'll start swinging this back and forth at one point, but we'll see. Okay, so first of all, on the top of the handout that you should have gotten when you get in is my name, high school, and email address. If you have any questions after this or want to steal things from me, I am totally okay with that. I share things with people all the time, so I feel like, ooh, can I have that handout? Yeah, that's fine. I made it. I'm going to go for it. But also, I like the idea, and at the end, I'm hoping we have some time. Something useful for you, because sometimes in these sessions, there's no connection, basically, but maybe write down a few things that you're challenged. And then if we're, while I'm talking, you think, oh, that would be really cool if she did it this way, or if, you know, everyone knew about this that I do, write it down on the right side and we'll share it with each other at the end. Okay. So a little bit of background. This, of course, is our dream student. Goes home, puts their headphones on of choice, sits down and goes, oh, I can't wait to write this assignment. I feel, you know, just called to write this, energetic, and oh, I connect so much with the prompt. But of course, this is the reality, at least that I deal with. I'm sure that none of you have to deal with students like this, but the attitude and eye roll, how many pages does this have to be? Wait, there's a word count? I recently caught a beloved youth, covenant youth, adding white words at the bottom of their paper when they turned it in. So when I checked the word count, it was like 5,000 words. I'm like, wow, good for them. And then, of course, caught them because I wasn't bored yesterday. And got all psyched about that. Okay, so a little bit about background of who I am. I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan at Grand Rapids Christian High School, which I always called Christian High. And then I moved to the Chicago area, and people are like, that's not Christian High. Chicago Christian is Christian High. Anyway, and had wonderful teachers there. One of them was Mrs. Knoll, who was my freshman high school teacher. She was fabulous and wonderful and just everything I thought an English teacher should be. And so I thought, well, maybe this teaching thing is for me. So I had always been the type of person who doesn't, this is one of my favorite quotes from literature, from A Little Princess by Franz Liszt, Hochstenberg, and that. So basically, it's the fact that you don't read books, you gobble them down. You read them as fast as you can, and then get on to the next one. There's so many things to do. So I always thought that teaching English would be sharing my love of literature and wonderful books and short stories and poems with students, and that's how we would connect, and it would be like the movies. But then I got my first job at Pella Christian Middle School in Pella, Iowa. And I came in and already teach my books, and I found out I was teaching grammar. And I went, because I grew up in the spell check generation of sitting at my kitchen table with my mom and crying as she drilled restaurant over and over in my head, and not being able to spell restaurant to save my life, not knowing what a noun is or a verb is or an adjective, and going and teaching in a foreign land grammar to 7th and 8th grade. There was no way I was going to do this, but somehow teaching actually teaches you how to do grammar. So that was my first kind of dip into the grammar thing. And then a year after that, I went to the school where I'm at right now, which is Iliad Christian High School. And this man on the screen is Jeff DeVries. He teaches English there. And I think it was my second year of teaching, he said, you know, we're going to get a new textbook for English. I don't really like how we do grammar here. The way that we did grammar when I first came there was, I think, I forget what we called it, but it was like a list of, Bill, do you remember what it was called? It was like the 12 or the 10.
Dirty Dozen.
The Dirty Dozen. That was it. And these are the 12 things that you do wrong, and you need to fix them, and that's it. So maybe it was a list, and we briefly touched on it, and then moved on with our lives. Thinking that middle school teachers taught you how to write a sentence, you know how to write a sentence, you'll be fine. But as a middle school teacher, I knew that was not the case. That we try since fourth grade, but kids still kind of somehow don't catch on. So how do you teach grammar? Well, we wrote this textbook called Winning Words, Discovering the Power of the Well-Crafted Sentence. One of my favorite things about teaching this nowadays is it still has my maiden name out there. I'm Olivia Ann Steve. And so when I'm teaching it, all my students are like, oh, this is the worst. I'm like, I know. It's Mr. DeVries' fault. And whoever this Miss Van Steve chick is, how dare she? And then slowly but surely they're like, wait a minute. You wrote this, didn't you? No, Emily Van Steen did. Anyway, so at Ileana, we use this grammar textbook. It's called Winning Words. Now, I am not one of those speakers who's going to say, and it's available for purchase in the lobby out there, because it is not available for purchase. I would love for it to be available for purchase. However, we kind of took quotes from books and didn't ask the author if we could use the quotes, so we're still working on making that kosher. Anyway, so don't tell anyone, okay? So, what is it? Well, here's the basic rundown of all the different chapters. Now, you'll notice a lot of things up here, especially if you teach middle school or have elementary school connections. Wait a minute, okay? Basic sentence, you're teaching this in high school? Nouns and verbs, adjectives and adverbs, preposition, prepositional phrases, advanced sentences, what? So the idea of this textbook is this. We know you know what a noun is. You listen to School of Rock, hopefully. Your middle school teacher made some in grounds, elementary school teacher made some in grounds on that. However, what is the right noun to use in this situation? What should we use, an abstract noun? Should we use concrete nouns? How do we make our writing something interesting? Because I always tell my students, if you're writing and no one is reading it, or people are falling asleep while they're reading it, why? Okay, you want to be able to connect to an audience, especially nowadays where you need this, you can only have this many words to keep someone's attention, and you need to be careful what those words are. The first day of class, what I do is we do a basic sentence, which I think is the next slide. Yep. So this is the first, it's very small. This is the first chapter, first page. And we give the example of you have a subject, you have a predicate, those are in bold. And then our example, of course, because when Jeff DeVries and I get together, we write sentences like this. So we say, Jojo, the crazed circus clown, is our subject, ran from the escaped lion, that's our predicate. And the first day of class, I go up to a student, I say, may I lightly tap you on the shoulder? Because I'm all about permission. They're like, okay, because they're freshmen, they have no idea what to experience. It's hilarious. So I go up there and tap, and I go, okay, subject, Miss Silvers, nice to meet you. And then I say verb, and then of course, because they're beloved Christian school students, they say tapped or hit. And when someone says hit, I look at them and I say, don't get me fired. And then they start giggling and they go, wait a minute, we have power here. And I'm like, okay, what words would get me fired? Slapped, punched, touched. I'm like, yeah, no, we don't say words like that. So we're going to be careful throughout the semester of what words we use when, because I don't want you to get fired someday, or myself fired. And I think that's hilarious for some reason. Anyway, so basic sentence, we start with that, and then we branch out. And this is something I like to do in my classroom for all different levels. I've taught freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior. It's been a while since I taught seniors, but right now I teach freshmen, so this, and then I teach honors juniors, which is basically AP composition, okay? So you can do this really with any level. You could do this in elementary school. I mean, it's very easy to do, but it works out really well. So what we do is we give them famous quotes. This is the copyright issue. Famous quotes from books, and they have to mimic it. So I say, keep the form, change the topic. For example, the first one, we're teaching them a little bit of inverted and interrupted syntax. So this is the idea that you can move objects or prepositional phrases to the front. And then interrupted syntax, where you have the subject, interrupter, verb. We just teach them over and over, subject, interrupter, verb. So for example, the first one is from Robert Frost, whose woods these are, I think I know. So I say, okay, change the topic, keep the form. So instead of whose woods these are, I think I know, I would say something like, whose phone this is, I think I know. Or whose phone is ringing, I think. And we just kind of add more and play around, and by the end we have something completely different, but it's the same format and we're not doing standard subject, verb, object. Okay, we're playing around with it a little bit. And then down there, too, you have to learn how to identify things. So we have a little C.S. Lewis, Matthew, J.R. Tolkien. Of course, my daughter's name Eowyn. How can I not have Tolkien? So in a hole in the ground, there lived a hobbit, you could say, in a locker in the hallway, there lived a moldy sandwich. I don't know. So then we keep going, and we have these things called interludes. And this was one of those great fun things in which we took Edgar Allan Poe's poem, The Raven, okay? I usually show a recording of it or something like that, and they've done it in middle school usually too, so don't have to worry about it. So what we did is we do The Raven, get them back into Poe. We eventually teach, of course, the classic high school Cask of Amontillado, Pit and Pendulums next year, Cask of Amontillado comes up later, or not Cask, Mask of the Red Death. So the intro is this. Edgar Allan Poe is most known for stories and poems of the macabre. These works of literature are full of doom and gloom for the lives of characters. Poe once said, "I became insane with long intervals of horrible sanity during this writing." What if during one of these long intervals of horrible sanity, he turned to a therapist for help? Read the script below and fill in the blanks when the information is called for. Remember that a script is like a story, so it needs to make sense. Now, I choose the most mature, which is saying something, freshman in my room, and they're the therapist, and I'm, of course, Poe. So then I turn on Moonlight Sonata on replay. So in the background, it's, you know, the classic, which dim the lights down a little bit. And then a student, usually some adorable little freshman boy, gives them, "Mr. Poe, it's an honor," you know, complete honor. And then I, of course, overplay it because I make more of a fool than they do of themselves. And so if you look in the next line, we give them different parts of the poem. So Lenore, Raven, Gone, Lonely, Nevermore, Palace, December. Then the therapist says, "Mr. Poe, I hate to interrupt the musings of a genius, but you've got to help me out a little here. I need a subject and a predicate to get a complete idea of what's bothering you. Could you try one more time for me, please?" And then we pause, and they have to use all those words in correct sentences to describe what happened. So, we're going to pause a minute, and you give it a try. You can work with someone next to you if that makes you more comfortable, or by yourself. It could be one sentence, it could be five. It's up to you. Give it a try.
Yes.
I got it.
Oh, that's okay. I'll give you a pass for one.
Spaghetti.
All right, I'll go investigate.
Just make sure all the plugs are. Thank you.
There, it's back. It's back.
I just jumped on
the bus. Okay, great.
All right, one more minute. Or two. Can you do that? All right, would anyone be willing to read what they wrote or what you can play in your part? Find your names, I would call on you. Was anyone able to, do you want to go? Okay, go for it. Yes.
"My lost lover is gone, which makes me so lonely. During December, the raven landed on the Boston Palace and said nevermore."
Nice. Well done. Did I?
Lenore was my girlfriend, but now she's gone, leaving me lonely. Then in the bleak December, a raven came and perched upon the pallid bust of Pallas, saying nevermore. That really got to me.
Yes. Good. Yes. I love the attitude. Excellent.
It's always fun when we're not paying attention to the poem, because I get 10 billion questions of, what's Pallas?
Yeah, exactly.
You have to explain the whole Greek mythology thing. Yeah. Good. Did anyone do it in one sentence? It sounded like we had... Most people did it in multiple? Nice. Good. Yeah. At this point, this is the halfway. You can go back to the rundown. So this is right here on this slide. So we have done basic sentence, nouns and verbs, adjectives and adverbs. So that means by this point, they've gotten to things like passive and active voice. We talked about how adjectives are especially important. Especially freshman boys, we talk about how adjectives are very important, and they do not get it, and then you say, okay, well, what would you call someone who's attractive? Hot. And then I turn to the girls next to them and say, would you like to be called hot? No, Miss Silligans. So we talk about why adjective, because of course, what I'm always fighting against in an English classroom, and I'm sure you get this in every classroom too, is why does this matter? Why should I care? Like, I don't need to know what a noun is. So the idea that, well, if you use the wrong verb, it's going to get you fired. If you use the right adjective, you could get the girl. I mean, there's a lot of kind of real-life applications here that kind of slowly you get them to understand. Okay, so just to give you an idea, sorry the screen is so small, but this is interlude number 2, so this is going to be further on, and this is something you can also do really at any level, is this. We took a famous letter from Jackie Robinson to the President of the United States, and we ruined it. And then we make them fix it. So we put comments on the side. With Google Docs nowadays, you could easily comment on things, and then you can just kind of print it off. So if you're doing kind of a famous document, if you're doing even a famous poem or something, you could ruin the rhythm and say, okay, well, what's wrong here? How can we fix this, make this better? For example, at the end, we have Jackie Robinson sign off, love Jackie Robinson. And we talk about why that's not appropriate. So you can talk about tone, you can talk about mood, you can talk about all these different things by making something terrible. So it's a lot of fun. Okay, so sophomore year, I'm kind of moving through the different years of English year. So that's freshman year, we do grammar, we do Romeo and Juliet. Second semester, we do essay writing and Cyrano de Bergerac, which is I don't like the female character, but anyway, that's a problem. Sophomore year, we do something with nonfiction, and I'm not going to dwell on this too much because tomorrow I'm talking about this entire unit, nonfiction unit that we do, where we give them 11 books to choose from. They can choose which one they want to read, and we do a lot of kind of things with signpost. I don't know if you teach signpost in your classroom, but we do a lot of things with signposts and things like that. But one of my favorite things I wanted to bring to you and to encourage you about is this. So what one of the assignments is for the nonfiction unit is writing a letter to the author. And I don't think kids realize that who they're reading is a real person. I also think, and this is no fault of our own, we often teach texts that are by people who have died hundreds of years ago. I'm a fan of Shakespeare, I'm a fan of Jane Austen, I'm a fan of all these people. However, there are some really good writers who are still living and breathing and doing a great job. So my coworker, Christy Medima, she's currently teaching this unit, and she got these letters back from authors. So it's tricky, of course, because most authors now use email. You can find addresses online, and we've worked on creating a database on that. Because we like to send them in paper for two reasons. One, it's more formal, it's more thought out when the author gets it. But two, we can also edit it before, whoops, I sent it. So we kind of work on editing that way in grammar. But these are two letters that she actually has, I don't know, I think she has these framed. This one of the stories, or books, I should say, that we read
is Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson. It's a beautiful book, very sad, just came out as a movie a couple years ago. And this is Bryan Stevenson writing back to our students and saying, thank you for your thoughtful, engaging, and insightful letters. It means a great deal for me to hear how Just Mercy is inspiring readers and transforming perspective. I'm encouraged by your kind words and deeper understanding of our criminal justice system. I hope you will continue to follow work our EL or EJI. Thank you for taking the time to write to me. And then he signs it, Bryan Stevenson says, thank you. So I think she has that one framed. And then the one over here is from author Mary Roach. She wrote Stiff, which is a book that we let kids read about what happens if you donate your body to science. It's one of those that's, again, it's a higher reading level. We have a lot of kind of, this is our easy side, this is our hard side. Stiff is obviously on that side. But she is writing back saying thank you for the thoughtful letter. So it's really cool to see how the kids interact with an author. So that is an idea for you. If you do some modern literature, and if you don't do some modern literature, it's a challenge for you to kind of mix that in with other people. I always try to do, so we do Edgar Allan Poe, but we also talk about Stephen King, you know, so kind of, and of course we all know we have very limited time in what we can teach, but it's kind of nice to make those connections. I also, part of what I do for fun and part of what I do for school too is I'm a big fan of watching movie trailers and seeing how they're put together and things like that. So if there's a movie coming out on a book, it's easy for me to be like, oh yeah. But of course there's a negative side to that too. Netflix just came out with The Fall of the House of Usher, and it is not for a Christian high school audience. So my students were very excited. Oh, did you see it coming in? And it is clever. I mean, every episode is named after a Poe story, but my husband watched it for me and was like, do not talk about this. So, I'm not going to talk about it. Okay, so moving on to junior year. This is AP English Language and Composition. I don't know what school you come from or what area in Indiana. We have a very close relationship with Ivy Tech. So we do a lot of dual credit classes. So instead of doing AP now, we call it dual credit. So technically it is not an AP course, even though our kids still can take the test and get college credit for taking the test, which just blows my mind. I wish that happened to me, but there you are. So what do I do with juniors? Well, it's American Lit, so we do American Lit. But it's a writing class, so we focus more on the writing aspects than we do the literary elements. Literary elements, they'll get with AP literature the next year. I do focus on some things, symbols, themes, stuff like that, but it's more for the techniques than it is for what is it, how do you identify it, why are they using this here. We start out with American authors and talk about rhetorical devices, so things like anaphora, antithesis, repetition, intentional, like word choice again, always word choice. And they write an independent speech because, of course, early American, you have our founding fathers and enlightenment, so they declare their independence from something. Right now I am grading papers still because I have 2 1-year-olds at home who don't want me to grade for some reason. And they do independence on serious thing. One person is talking about the R word and how her sister is mentally disabled and she hates that and wishes people would stop using that, which is a powerful one. And then I also get things from Cold, like Cold Stone is the worst place to work at. You shouldn't work there. And I start my independence from it. So multiple things. Right now, however, we are in the Romantics, which is my favorite. And we did Edgar Allan Poe, The Mask of the Red Death. And we are going to be starting The Scarlet Letter in a few weeks, which is wonderful to teach, especially if you kind of try to confuse them who Baby Daddy is in the first part, and you tell them you can't look it up, you can't look it up. Last year I was on maternity leave, and my sub told them day one who Dad was. I know! I was mortified. Anyway, so it's awful. Now, things with Poe and with Hawthorne is, of course, language. This is Old English, which is so funny, because I'll show you what we do and prove to them it's not Old English. But they don't understand the language part. And one thing about Poe, of course, is he's very intentional about how he chooses. We have the unity of fact we talk about, so every word. So what we do after we read Poe is what I call an etymology paper. Now, I went to Calvin College, And I had to take a class in which we talked about the history of the English language, and I thought it was fascinating and never knew anything about it. And then, of course, we had the why are we to learn this thing, and we talk about how, well, okay, pretend it's not you. Why would someone dedicate their life to this? And they say, I don't know. And I said, last night my husband for 15 minutes told me how this happens. I don't care how this happens. I'm an English major. This is magic. Okay? Unless it's broken, I don't really need. But he finds it so fascinating how things work. And people in your life find things so fascinating of how we get the words that we do and how they develop. So we study kind of how words change, but also where did the English language come from. We started something this year where every year I'm doing a slide of slang terms. So I have four sections of juniors this year, which is 90 students. It's way too much. But every class got to edit the slide. And so now that's their slide. And next year, we'll get a new slide, and we'll see how language has changed through Ilyana over the years. So they're very intrigued to see what next year's class has to say about their slang slides. So what do I do with etymology? Well, we write a paper, sorry, this is formatted terribly, about a word that Edgar Allan Poe uses. Because, of course, Poe, we talked about in the previous unit, Poe chooses his words carefully. So why is that word so cool? So I give them a list of words. From the first ones, things like aloft, blasphemous, contagion, decorum, eccentric, frenzy, girdled, hideous, impede, luster, pestilence. And I choose words that students know, but also words that they don't know. Okay? Now, here's the fun part. Little do they know, these are also words that appear in Nathaniel Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter. Scarlet Letter. So we'll start reading Scarlet Letter and be like, wait a minute. This was my word from my paper. I thought I escaped this word, and I'm like, aha, no, you didn't. So half the vocab is already taken care of because we wrote papers on it. So this is what they do. We get a subscription to the Oxford English Dictionary, which is one of the loves of my life. It's so cool. And students do research on that. They do outside research. We talk about how some of these words, I mean, when's the last time you heard someone use the word pestilence, you know, in a non-ironic tone? So we talk about, okay, is that word dying? And what will it do to get this word to come back? So what rap artist would have to use it in order for it to become popular again? So they talk about that in their paper, and that makes it fun. Another paper we do, if you're looking for kind of an idea of what to do with American literature or just writing in general, I know as a freshman it's always a challenge to come up with essay prompts. So one of my favorite things we do is we talk about the American Dream, it's American Lit class, and they have to write a research paper on a very, I don't want to say unknown, but smaller group of an activity. So you can't write about football, okay? Everyone knows football, it's fine. But what about roller derby, or LARPing, or air band competitions? There are actually air band competitions out there. We talked about sign language, which is a little bit too much. There's also wheelchair rugby, which I didn't know existed. And what's fun, too, is I always try to choose topics where kids can come up to me and be like, Mrs. Hilligans, I'm passionate about modifying my... The guns with the foam bullets. Nerf guns. There's a whole crew of us. We modify Nerf guns. It's an online community. I'll show you. Like, I can use this source and this source and this source. Okay, that's great. So every year I add things to it, too. Also, the Browner Brothers hair competition, fantasy hairstyling. So it's just kind of a fun way. And I think, too, at a Christian school, we want to kind of open their minds to there are people who are different from you, and that's okay. Okay? And there are things you can do, especially some of my kids, they're not going to be the star of the basketball team. They're not going to do it. But they LARP every weekend, and they have a community there, and that's their people. Okay, so finding your people, I think, is a big thing. Okay, so peer editing. I don't know how much peer editing you do in your class. I do various forms of it. It is always structured. It is never sit down and read each other's papers and tell what you think, because usually the answer is fine, it's good. Great job. This is something I came up with a couple years ago, and my students think it's because I'm a romantic, but I'm a capital R romantic, not a lowercase r romantic. So this is speed dating. What I do is line them up across from each other, okay? And I play jazzy cafe music in the background. And they follow a script because kids, also communication is key. And for some reason, our kids can't communicate face-to-face a lot. So the first person says, hi, my name is... And I say, you can make up a name by this point. They know your name. It's okay if you want to say, like, I don't know, Juan or something. And I'm doing blank as my group. So this is with the American Dream Paper. So I'm doing D&D as my group. Person two, oh, that's, and then they have to put an adjective in there because we're all about word choice and AP Comm. Oh, that's cool, interesting, ecstatic. Sometimes I give them a list of adjectives and say you can only choose one of these, and it's never something boring. I already know, so what does the person already know about D&D? I already know that my grandma thinks that D&D is worshiping Satan in the basement. And only geeks do it. Okay, and then the person who's writing says, so you said that your grandma thinks it's a little satanic, and that it's only geeks. You're incorrect in that. And then you should also know that D&D is actually pretty mainstream now, and there's this thing called Dropout TV, and you can look up YouTube things. There's a lot of podcasts, and they talk about their paper. Then person two says, so do you think they're showing the American Dream by this? And the reason I have them do this is because I want the other person to brainstorm for them. And say, oh, wait, so you think it shows the American Dream by, I don't know, people have money they can spend, so they spend it on D&D dice, and they're like, okay, like, you can see that aspect, but for the most part, I like how you said blah, 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 so re-see what they said, but I also think that it shows the American Dream by this, okay? And then person two ends with, oh, cool, because that's one of the most high school things ever. And then they switch. So they switch roles, and then we rotate. Okay, so stop the music, rotate two to the right, do it again. Do it again, 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 again. So that's kind of works really well for brainstorming. I've also done it with use the first paragraph of your paper. Okay, have read it out loud to them. What do they think? Critique it. Move to the next person does the second paragraph, the next person does the third, and just as many different ideas and eyes on it as possible. All right. Since you've been sitting there for a while, your next activity. American Lit, one of my favorite poems of all time that I read in high school, and it absolutely, I can't say blew my mind because of the end of this poem, but it fascinated me. I didn't think poetry could do this. So when I'm teaching this, I break it up on slides. I never show them the ending until the very last slide, so I clip through all the slides. For those of you who haven't read Richard Corey before, congratulations, you're about to experience something. So, this is Richard Corey by Edwin Arlington Robinson. Whenever Richard Corey went downtown, we people on the pavement looked at him. He was a gentleman from sole to crown, clean favored and imperially slim. He was always quietly arrayed and was always human when he talked. But he fluttered pulses when he said good morning, and he glittered when he walked. And he was rich, yes, richer than a king, and admirably schooled in every grace. In fine, we thought he was everything to make us wish that we were in his place. So on we worked and waited for the light and went without the mead and cursed the bread, and Richard Corey, one calm summer night, went home and put a bullet through his head. Oh. Wow. So we talk about, of course, like suicide, and we talk about, like, as Christians, how do we look at this poem and this viewpoint of the world? Because by this point, we're in modernism, and it's February, and it's cold, and it's just gray. And I'm sure you live in exotic places where this never happens, but we'd watch happy videos at the end of class because poems are just, you read Sylvia Plath and you can only read poems. Oh. Anyway, so what I have my students do with this, because for some reason kids don't like poetry, which is weird, because it's so, I don't know, I was an English major, so fun. It's easy to write, well, it's easy to write, but... And so with this, and again, you can do this with any grade, any poem, anything. I say, okay, you need to rewrite this poem. The only thing you have to do is, one, follow the rhyme scheme or have a rhyme scheme. Two, you need some sort of twist at the end. Okay? So this is what juniors in high school came up with. We'll see what trained educators at CA convention can come up with. Elroy Stoltz. soul lived for the highs. He leaped out of the tallest trees just to soar through the skies, but never once even scraped his knees. He learned how to tightrope when only a four-year-old lad. Each time he fell from a high slope, his neck was not bruised but a tad. Elroy wrestled with huge boys. He lost all the strong men. Yet at the end of the yelling and noise, he was ready to fight them again. Elroy Stoll did whatever he pleased, never hurt by what he might do. Then one damp morning he sneezed. 2 days later, he died of the flu. Frederick Russell was tall, neat, and prim, a man of great towering height, although he was quite cute and slim with his smile so handsome and bright. He was the greatest shoe shiner in the town. In his intermissions, he loved to play chess. From a match, he would never break down unless shoes he was promised to caress, but I don't know where that came from, but whatever. Everywhere, Frederick was a household name, despite the fact he had not one friend. He was simple, boring, certainly not lame. Work, church, and home is all he would attend. Known to all as an honest man who never lied, he stayed in every weekend a home dweller. Frederick, a man of quiet solitude with none to hide, will accept the 12 bodies hiding deep in a cellar. Before I set you loose for, I don't know how much time, about 5-10 minutes, have examples from previous classes. Because then, one, kids know they can do it, and two, it's competition, okay? And kids love, some kids especially, I can do better than this, okay? So I would encourage you, I know if you do this for the first time, maybe you write one and say, do better than I can. Give it a try. So, this one, I'm going to require you to work with someone next to you because it's a little bit more complicated. So maybe groups of threes or something like that. Unless you're like, I'm a born poet, I can do this on my own. Give it a try. 4 stanzas, some type of rhyme scheme. Twist up.
Yeah.
Choose a name from one of the tombstones. Speaking of going to cemeteries, creative writing. So just in the last few minutes I have, I think I have 10 minutes, creative writing is a class that we have at Ileana every other year. It's an elective. It's a lot of fun to teach. We actually go to the cemetery and write a poem about someone based on their tombstone and do they have flowers, what's written on it, things like that, which students either find creepy. I've had a few people say it's disrespectful. Then I say, when you die, do you want high school students writing poems about you? And then there's also mixed reviews of that question. Yeah, I think that'd be awesome. Or, no, I don't want high school students. But anyway, it's a very fun class. And it's divided up in, we do poetry first, and then we do fiction second. Because the majority of students, you usually get one or two in there who are gung-ho poetry, but the majority are in it for the short stories and the fiction and things like that. So I just want to share a few things that I do with you that might be able to fit in your classroom as well. First of all, I'm a big believer in getting outside people in.
or going to them. So this, again, is very small, but it's a rundown of people I have come and talk to my classroom, either through Zoom. With COVID, we did it all in Zoom, but I prefer to have people visit. So we have different occupations. When I was in college and high school, I thought if you're an English major, you were an English teacher. That's it. That's all you had. Little did I know there were things out there. I also try to get grads from our school. And so, for example, Russell Dorsey, he's a sports journalist. He writes about the Cubs and was the first African-American writer for something, something, something. So, and all the girls think he's attractive. So, I mean, that helps too. But anyway, so we have a sports journalist, a poet, grant writer, technical writer, journalist, novelist, songwriter, literary agent, young adult author, nonprofit writer, movie critic, freelance writer, professor
who focuses on graphic novels,
and political writer who come in too. So just an idea, the more you do it, the more connections you make, and also once you're part of a community, it's easy to find connections. We also go to the Poetry Foundation, downtown Chicago, which is a lovely building. If you're ever in Chicago, stop by. It's free. You can just walk in. It's just a beautiful place and very peaceful setting. We also, last year, we wrote poems for devotions. So our theme had to do with kind of the body of Christ. And so I divided up the body, and they had to write a poem about one section, and then I put it in our school-wide devotions. So I didn't put their names on it. They told me not to. And so this was the elbows, which they talked about how luckily we're not like Barbie dolls and we have elbows that God gave us, which is kind of cool. According to the clatter and hallway, I'm out of time, but just to give you an idea of what you can do too, this is a choose your own adventure graph. I used to love these books when I was a kid. So I have my creative writing kids write a choose your own adventure, and we brainstorm on the chart that you have below. I've also done this I've heard of history teachers doing this, where they say okay, if so-and-so didn't choose so-and-so, what would have happened? And then kind of research it that way. So that's a cool idea too. These are my students reading to elementary school kids. We go to Crown Point Christian, read children's books that they wrote to younger grades. I don't know if your school is attached to an elementary school or middle school. That's kind of a fun way to bridge the gap, and the kids are enamored. And then, unfortunately, we don't have time for that, but yeah, I'll end on that. Thank you.